So before my colleagues give you some more detail about the work going on here at the Cambridge High Energy Physics Group, I thought I'd give you a very brief introduction to particle physics, and particularly to the machine that most of us are involved in working on, which is the Large Hadron Collider. But first, just a very brief introduction to particle physics. Particle physics is ultimately the study of matter, the stuff that makes up the world we live in, and also the forces that bind matter together. So if you go back, sort of went back 100 years, people would tell you that matter was made of around 90 or so chemical elements, which were arranged in the periodic table, and that for each of these chemical elements there was an atom, and these were thought of as being indivisible little building blocks of the universe. But of course, we now know that atoms are not the smallest things, they're made of smaller particles. So the model of the atom that we all learn about in school is that you have a tiny central nucleus, which is positively charged, around which move these fundamental particles called electrons, which are negatively charged. And then if we zoom in on the nucleus a little more, we find that the nucleus itself is made of even smaller particles, which are called protons and neutrons. And you have protons are about 2,000 times heavier than electrons, except they have a positive charge. And neutrons, again, about the same mass as the proton, but have no charge overall. Then if you zoom in even closer, in the 1960s, it was discovered that protons and neutrons themselves are made of even smaller particles called quarks. And quarks, there are basically two types that make up the ordinary matter in the universe. There's the up quark, which has a plus 2/3 charge, represented by this little red triangle, and then the down quark, which is a charge of minus 1/3. So two ups and a down make a proton, and two downs and an up make a neutron. So everything we know about the particles that make up our universe are brought together in a single theory known as the Standard Model of Particle Physics, which is an extraordinarily boring sounding name for probably the best scientific theory that human beings have ever come up with. It describes the particles that make up matter, so the electrons and the quarks, as well as the forces that bind them together. So this includes the electromagnetic force, the strong force, which binds the nucleus together, and then the weak nuclear force, which is responsible for radioactive decay and for particles converting from one type into another. Now, the final piece of the Standard Model that was discovered about 8 years ago at the Large Hadron Collider was the Higgs boson, which is intimately connected with the reason that these fundamental particles have mass. So this theory is stunningly successful. It matches every experiment we've ever done, and it can describe the physics of all the visible material in the universe. But we know that it must be incomplete. And there are several reasons for this, but I'll give you just one as a sort of taster, which is that we know from astronomy now that there is at least 5 times more invisible dark matter in the universe than the ordinary atomic matter that makes up planets and stars and dust and gas and things that we can see with telescopes. And there are no particles in the Standard Model that can explain what dark matter is. So we know for this reason alone, there must be something more to be found. And that's where the Large Hadron Collider comes in. The Large Hadron Collider is the biggest scientific instrument ever built by human beings. This is an aerial shot showing the countryside near Geneva in Switzerland, where the LHC is based. Marked on the countryside in yellow, you can see the root of this machine. It's a 27-kilometer circumference particle collider. And what it does ultimately is really quite simple and brutal. It takes protons, the center of hydrogen atoms, it whizzes them round and round in a circle and accelerates them to 99.9999991% of the speed of light. And then beams of protons are collided directly into each other inside 4 detectors that are spaced around the ring. And the job of these detectors is then to record the collisions. Now, the purpose of the LHC ultimately is to create new types of particles that don't normally exist in the universe. And it does this by giving protons huge amounts of kinetic energy. So that's the energy because they're moving very fast. And when they smack into each other, that kinetic energy is used to make new particles. So energy is converted into mass, as captured by Einstein's famous equation E equals mc squared. So the LHC ultimately is a matter factory. It makes particles. If you were to go down into the LHC tunnel, this is what you would see, a very, very, very long blue tube curving away into the distance. What you're looking at here are huge 35-ton superconducting magnets. These are magnets that are used to steer the protons around the ring. Because they're moving incredibly quickly, you need a very powerful force to make them bend in a circle. They go around the ring, bent by these magnets, and every time they make an orbit, they're given a little kick by an electric field that accelerates them. And by accelerating them over and over again as they orbit the machine, you can get them to very, very high speeds. And then at 4 points around the ring, this tunnel opens up into these huge subterranean caverns which contain the detectors. This is a shot of the Atlas experiment, which is the largest of the four detectors at the LHC, and many of my colleagues at Cambridge work on this experiment. It's essentially an enormous 45-metre long, 20-metre high digital camera, three-dimensional digital camera, whose job it is to record the collisions and see where the particles go as they come flying out from these almighty smash-ups produced by the LHC. This is the detector that I work on. It's called LHCb, another one of these four detectors. We're interested in studying the subtle differences between matter and antimatter, and we do this by measuring an exotic type of quark known as a beauty quark. Again, this is another one of these detectors. It has different layers that allow us to understand what's going on in the collisions, and my colleagues will tell you more about that in a little bit. And this is a sort of a representative image of the sort of thing that happens when particles collide. This is a collision recorded by the LHCb experiment. You can see the particles have crashed into each other at the edge of the image, and then you can see all these lines, and these represent the tracks of different particles that are produced in these very high energy collisions. And the idea is to scan through billions and billions and billions of these collisions in the hope of seeing either some new particles or to catch particles that we already know about behaving in ways that we don't expect, in the hope of being able to find answers to some of these big fundamental questions that we're trying to solve.
I'd like to give you a guided tour of how a detector works, and I'll use my Atlas detector as a good example of a typical detector system. We use layers of different types of detectors to give us information on the particles produced in the LHC collisions. The first type of detector is a tracker, which allows us to see the paths of charged particles. As charged particles travel through the tracker, they liberate electrons from the material. These then drift towards a readout sensor and allow us to record the presence of a particle. We layer the trackers so we can follow a particle's path through the detector, a bit like how a bullet would punch holes in the pages of a book. We put the trackers in a magnetic field, and this bends the charged particles, allowing us to measure their momentum, which is related to their mass and speed. Positively and negatively charged particles will actually bend in opposite directions because of the magnetic field, and this allows us to measure the charge of the particle. The second type of detector is a calorimeter, which stops most particles and measures their energies. As particles travel through the calorimeter layers, they interact with the material, producing a shower of particles which are stopped and measured. So here we are measuring the energy of particles. Putting these two types of detectors together in a huge detector system in layers allows us to identify the types of particles that are traveling through our detector and measure their properties. The first layers surrounding the collision point are trackers, allowing us to observe charged particles from the collisions. The tracking system is surrounded by a powerful solenoid magnet to provide a magnetic field in the tracker and bend the charged particles. The next two layers are calorimeters. The first calorimeter stops and measures electrons and photons, while the second measures protons and neutrons. Finally, we place more tracking systems on the outside to detect very penetrating particles called muons, which are heavy versions of the electron. This has its own special magnet type to bend the muons, and this time they are donut-shaped or toroidal. Let's look at some examples of different types of particles traveling through the Atlas detector. The electron leaves a track and a shower in the first layer of calorimeter. A photon is neutral, so we have no track, but leaves a shower in the calorimeter. Protons leave a track and a calorimeter shower, but this time in the second calorimeter, as protons are harder to stop than electrons. Neutrons leave no track, but again a calorimeter shower in the second layer. Muons are very penetrating, leaving a track, and penetrate to the outermost layers of the detector, where we see another track in the muon tracking system. Finally, particles such as neutrinos and perhaps dark matter are invisible to our detectors and pass through undetected. We can infer their presence by an imbalance of energy and momentum. Each type of particle leaves its own unique signature, allowing us to know which particles were produced in the LHC collisions.
In my laboratory here in Cambridge, I have an apparatus made out of some of the same pieces that he used in the ATLAS detector at CERN. It is a good example of how a particle detector works. It was designed by a recent Cambridge PhD student, Floris Kaiser, who is now working at CERN on the LHCb experiment. Particle physics detectors often find surprising uses outside of particle physics research. This apparatus uses naturally occurring high-energy cosmic ray particles in order to see inside sealed containers. These cosmic ray particles, called muons, can travel through 100 meters of rock before being absorbed. They can easily pass through this building and into the ground beneath. And they're everywhere. Several are passing through your body every second without you even being aware of them. Muons are negatively charged, just like an electron. If a muon passes close enough to a positively charged atomic nucleus, it will be deflected by the force between the charged muon and the charged nucleus. Higher atomic number elements like iron, lead, gold, uranium, or plutonium have more positive charge in the nucleus because there are more protons. So the force is stronger and the muon will be deflected more than for low atomic number elements like silicon, carbon, oxygen, or hydrogen. Now, if I can measure how much the muon is deflected, I can figure out what sort of material it passed through, even if I might not be able to see or touch the material directly. It might be inside a nuclear waste container, for example, or inside a sealed container in a lorry passing through a port. It might also be steel reinforcement bars buried in concrete blocks in a bridge or in a building. So the idea is this. I measure the direction of the muon before it enters the material, and again after it has passed through. And I compare the direction to see how much it was deflected. By measuring lots of muons, I can build up an image of the material. When I want to take a measurement, I put a sample of the material in the middle of the apparatus. Here's the sample that I'm going to show you. It's an iron bar, and it's mounted in a plastic holder. Notice the shape of the iron bar and of the holder. And this will be placed in the middle of the apparatus in order to record data. I'll put it here so that you can remember what it looks like. The incoming muon direction will be measured in the top four layers and the outgoing direction in the bottom four layers. Inside the protective boxes that you could see are the very precise sensors that are also used in the ATLAS detector at CERN. You can see in the picture the rectangular silicon sensors. And if you look closely, six integrated circuits that capture the signals produced by a muon as it passes through. The principle of operation is quite straightforward. I want to reconstruct the three-dimensional path of the muon, and I do this by making a two-dimensional measurement of the muon location in each of the four layers, and then join the dots. In this way, I make a three-dimensional track. With a computer program, I can then build an image of the sample. It takes thousands of individual muons to create each of these images. In the second image from the left, you can probably just make out the shape of the sample holder. This data was recorded without the iron sample. The holder is made up of low atomic number materials, so it is hard to distinguish it from the surroundings. I've shown the holder outlined with a dotted line to help you see. The two images on the right show the same view with the sample in place. It is easy in these images to locate the concentration of high atomic number material. So that's the principle by which many of our particle physics detectors work. We make many measurements of a particle along its track in order to build up a 3D picture. Of course, we need to scale this apparatus up hundreds or thousands of times to build a detector like ATLAS.
On the 4th of July 2012, the ATLAS and CMS experiments at CERN announced that they discovered a new particle. This is the Higgs boson, which is associated with the Higgs field that explains how particles in our universe acquire mass. So this was an enormous milestone for particle physics because it experimentally completed the standard model. We know, though, that this can't be a complete theory of everything, and there are several shortcomings that lead us to expect some new physics at the LHC. One example is dark matter, which is something we know makes up around a quarter of the mass and energy in the universe, but we don't have a candidate for it in the standard model. We can, however, see its gravitational effects in the universe, for example, through affecting the rotation curves of galaxies. This means that following on from the Higgs, one of the main priorities of the LHC experiments has been to search for some kind of new physics that could explain these shortcomings. So we can either do this directly by searching for new particles predicted in theories for what we call beyond the standard model physics. So I personally work on supersymmetry, which is a new theory that predicts heavier superpartners for all of the known particles in the standard model. We can also search for indirect hints of new physics. So this is where measurements in our dataset don't match what's predicted in the standard model, and deviations from these predictions could hint that some form of new physics is coming into play. And to give you a feel for the breadth of different searches for new physics taking place at the Large Hadron Collider, I asked a few of our PhD students to give us a quick summary of what they hope they might find in the next few years.
In our analysis team, we're hoping to discover new long-lived particles beyond the standard model that may be candidates for dark matter.
The LHCb experiment hoped to measure deviations from standard model predictions in decay processes. This might indicate the effect of beyond standard model particles, even if those particles are too heavy to be observed directly.
We're looking for evidence of supersymmetric particles, and personally I'm searching for the STAU, which is the supersymmetric partner of the tau lepton.
So if we look further ahead beyond just the next few years, our plans are already underway for the next generation of collider experiments beyond the LHC. And the reason for that is the long life cycle of these experiments from planning and design through to eventual data taking. And there are plans underway to build a new 100 kilometer ring in Geneva that would actually potentially use the LHC as an injector ring. So this could first be used to collide electrons with positrons, which are their antiparticles at high energy. And this experiment would allow us to make really precise measurements of some of the properties of the standard model, including the Higgs boson. So following on from that, we could also later use this machine to collide protons together at a centre of mass energy of 100 tera electron volts. So this is nearly 10 times the collision energy of the LHC and could allow us to discover new, even heavier particles that we wouldn't be able to access in the LHC collisions. So there's a lot of exciting work that will be going on in high energy physics for the decades to come.